Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hello, Blenders, and welcome. Welcome to episode number 262 of Real Blend, a podcast that can finally stop nagging Mark Hamill on social media.
Hey.
My name is Sean O'Connell, the managing editor here at Cinema Blend, and on this week's show, we are going to discuss that new Mission Impossible trailer that dropped the day that we are recording. We have some new indie footage, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, that we're going to react to. And you know what's weird about that, too, is that tomorrow, people at the Cannes Film Festival will have seen Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. So by the time you're listening to this, there will be feedback about how it is.
Are they typically allowed to do full reviews? Yeah. Do you know?
Yeah.
Full reviews?
Yes.
Yeah. Just spoilers, I assume, is the only.
Yeah,
wait, I would imagine.
Not just reactions. Days. They can do full reviews.
I guarantee the trades will have full reviews tomorrow. Because it played a festival. So it's fair game.
When does it open?
The end of June. June 30th.
Kevin, we could catch a flight right after we're done recording.
I'm down. I mean, listen, someone said this the other day, and we'll get into this when we talk about the clips, but Mangold is the reason why I'm excited about that movie.
Oh, yeah.
He is, and Sean pointed this out in our text thread, he has not missed.
Yeah.
From Copland to, you know, Logan to 310 to Yuma to Walk the Line. I mean, that gives me the
Ford Ferrari.
Ford v Ferrari. I love how I think he's underrated in terms of just general filmmakers. But anyways, we'll get into that. Yeah.
Well, speaking of filmmakers, director Louis Leterrier is going to join the show this week. And he's talking about Fast X. And his stepping in. We didn't focus a whole lot on him stepping in for Justin Lin, because I feel like he did a wave of interviews and answered that question like a bunch of times. So instead, I tried to use our time to really get into the meat of the movie, but really focused on things that were in the trailer. So you can listen to this before you go see Fast X. And then when you come back, I think you'll appreciate a lot of his answers. So,
and also, Sean brings up a good point. Like, we as journalists, like, we want to ask the best questions, the things that we want to know. But there's a point in a press tour where you just are hearing that answer over and over again. And if you go there and like, then people are like, well, why didn't you ask it? And then you go, because he already answered it 25 times.
You have to be able to find a new, if you're going to ask that same question, quote unquote, you have to find a new way into it that gets something interesting and different. And
which is it's a fascinating story, you know, and I do feel bad that, like, if you haven't heard him, because I mean, he legitimately answered the phone and then like 5 days later was on set calling action.
For people who don't know, I mean, in case you're like completely not knowing what's going on with the Fast and Furious films, Justin Lin was originally on as the filmmaker. He's been part of the Fast and Furious franchise for a long time. If you haven't seen Better Luck Tomorrow, highly recommend that. He was great on our show for Fast 9. I don't know how far into production they were on Fast 10.
I think it was day one. I think they were like about to start shooting.
Day one?
This is a memory, but it was like I'm pretty sure we got an update that like Fast 10's shooting, and then it was very quickly looking for a new director.
And then Justin was off the project. There's alleged reasons we can dive into at other points in time. But as you're going to hear in this interview, the director of Fast X is our guest this week, and it's not Justin Lin. and this is the Incredible Hulk filmmaker, correct?
Yes. And he also did Transporters movies with Statham and Now You See Me. And you know who he was a DP for or assistant director for?
Who?
Luc Besson. He worked under Luc Besson for years.
Was he on The Professional?
I don't think that far back. I think Fifth Element. I think he did some stuff for Fifth Element.
See, that's cool. I remember we had Barry Sonnenfeld on. Like, the stories that you get from these guys before they became like the filmmaker that they are, the work that they did.
Yeah.
Highly recommend like that. That's cool. Also, I got to say, Louis Leterrier's name is amazing. it just flows like it's perfectly. Great. Yeah. It's
really great. The Justin Lin, it was the first week. I think they said it's days into production that.
He was like,
this isn't worth my mental health, was what I believe.
And Justin Lin is such a huge part of this. I mean, we got to, you know, pay respect to him because, you know, he is, in my opinion, a big reason why this franchise has continued the way it has. It's made the money that it's made. He's a big practical effects guy. So I can't wait to see the new one. I know Sean hasn't seen it. He'll review it later on. I think
the issue was they were days in and Vin hadn't showed up yet. So, ding, ding, cha.
Hey.
All right. That's Kevin McCarthy of Fox 5 in Washington, D.C. Hello, Kev. How are you?
Hi, Sean. Gabriel. Good to see you guys today, as always. And I'm pumped up. Man, it's summer movie season is approaching and I just can't wait. I can't wait. This show. I'm so happy we have this show for the next coming months, just in terms of what's coming out. Like, it's just so much content. So many topics. Movies are back. Billions of dollars. It's just awesome.
Yeah. I mean, we were complaining a bit about having screenings like every night for this week, but they're big things. They're like, I saw Fast X and then I saw Little Mermaid and I'm off to the Boogeyman. And so it's all good stuff. And so if you're watching us on the YouTube channel, you'll recognize Gabe Kovach is sitting in the Jake Hamilton chair. Jake had to do some on-air reporting at the time. If you're also, while you're on the YouTube channel, thank you so much for coming here. Hit subscribe, turn on new notifications, leave us a comment down below. Continue to weigh in with the notification crew. Send us feedback as well, too. I love hearing from you guys about things that you like and don't like about the show. We're at youtube.com/RealBlend Podcast. If you would like to sign up for even more Real Blend, we have something called the Real Blend Premium. It gets you an ad-free version of the show and a newsletter written by myself. And I'm going to have one out this week to everybody. So check the description for information on where you can sign up for that premium. And I forgot to mention, in addition, you get an additional show from us on Mondays. So plenty more Real Blend coming your way. All right. I don't want to wait much longer on this one because it's a really great conversation. Louis Leterrier joining the Real Blend podcast to talk about Fast X. How are things going? You doing okay?
Good, great, great, great. Everything. I mean, great. It's at the same time the end of an amazing journey and just the beginning. It's like, it's insane. And it's like, yeah, it's very, very exciting and it's nerve wracking. And I want to hide under a rock and at the same time go to see every movie and every theater and experience the joy with the audience. So I don't know. My brain is exploding. My heart is exploding.
I know. The getting over that finish line has got to be extremely difficult. So
no, it's the finish line is one thing. It's kind of like it's releasing your baby and having the world see it at the moment. Yeah.
So essentially, we're a filmmaking podcast, Real Blend. We like to get into the nuts and bolts of the filmmaking process. And I want to start with a scene that people are very familiar with because they've been able to see it in the trailers, but still not quite understand the scope of it, which is the Rome sequence with the bomb rolling through the city. And I want you to tell me something in that sequence that physically happens that we would assume is CGI, but that you managed to do practically.
You know what? Everywhere, apart from a giant explosion destroying Rome, most of it was done for real. It's just a mix of different elements that were put together. One thing that really was complex and done practically was that giant bomb rolled down the streets of Rome. It was a one ton, obviously not a bomb, but it recreated a one ton metal ball that was rolled down this you know, ancestral city where everything is perfect and cannot be rebuilt. And we had to, you know, have, we had cables holding it and everything, but frankly, we could not miss the stunt, and the only thing to really stop it was that car, was Dom's Charger.
Okay.
and we did it for real. We set it up, you know, we set it on fire, we blew up gas stations, all that stuff was done for real. In Rome, they gave us the key to the city. The town government and the city of Rome and the mayor, they just opened their streets to us and just said, all right, go ahead, just create magic, but give it, you know, don't break anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Leave some of us standing, please.
Yeah, exactly.
The one that caught my eye is
the bus was done for real. And to add to the complexity of the bus, you know, it's just, you cannot do it 10 times. You don't want to do it 10 times because sure, it's very complex and expensive and dangerous. But to add more complexity, we had shots inside the bus with passengers, real passengers, having to jump out of the way as this ball was rolling. But we knew the point of impact, but the bus was rolling, but it was... there's always a chance of the stuff moving. So you know, you as a stuntman, you have to go, do I move left? Do I go right? Kind of like, yeah, it's like, yeah, do I, where will the ball hit? And when it, there's a little bit of being, everything was done perfectly. We, nothing was broken. No one was hurt. It was done absolutely perfectly. You know, we spun, we blew giant 2-ton Hummers up in the air. It's just like we did it all. The one thing that we could not do was, or we didn't want to do because the place is a, you know, it's absolutely superb and very fragile. All those Spanish steps, you know, the moment where the ball starts rolling again and then stops it and, you know, has to knock it away from the crowd and saves a couple of dogs and all that stuff. So that stuff we couldn't do for real then there. So we recreated the whole, we did the top and the bottom, and we recreated the whole Spanish steps and shot some plates with people throughout the Spanish steps. We recreated the car on other steps, like the same looking Spanish steps that we built in a, on a backlot in London. And then we shot that for a couple of days and it went really well. And then the day after we were done with that Spanish step sequence, I, you know, it was the weekend, I opened my eyes, I heard, you know, turned on the news and I heard Spanish steps, the car goes down. I was like, oh, they must tell us. And the Maserati is like, no, that was not a Maserati. The tourist took his car, rented a Maserati and drove the car down the steps. And did and broke basically the big, yeah, did the stuff and then did what we didn't want to do and broke the steps. And I was there last week, they repaired them, but I was like, no, we're not guilty. No one saw us doing anything. That's not us. No, the trailer was not out. We didn't, you know, didn't inspire anyone.
Right,
that
right.
Tourist just, yeah. No, it's not me. It's not me.
Some rogue Toretto got loose.
Some Torettoism. Yeah.
So there's obviously you've talked about the fact that you loved Fast Five and there are key sequences from Fast Five that are pivotal to the start of this. I want to know how many times you think you had to watch the bank heist scene to make sure that the action you were going to include matched up visually with shots that already existed in that finished film.
This is possibly the greatest moment, action moment in the whole franchise, possibly the greatest moment, you know, one of the greatest moments in cinema history. I had to not only watch it cut in the movie with sound effects, but also had to watch all the dailies, everything that had been shot in Brazil, because what we needed to do was to rush them on that scene to make it, to show it through the angles, through the eyes of the Reyes, you know, so make Dom Toretto and Brian O'Connor the villain. So I went through the dailies. We went through everything. We rebuilt it. We realized the scenes that we missed, the connection moments that hadn't been shot then that we need to shoot again. We also identified some shots with different drivers where I could use motion control and put Jason Momoa behind the wheel. Joaquin de Almeida interacting with Jason Momoa as his son when it was completely, you know, in the original movie, there were like, you know, two different cars and everything. Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, not only did I watch and recreate everything, I put myself in the shoe, you know, in Justin's shoes then and said, oh, what if you shot it differently? What if you shot it? You know, I understood how Justin had shot it and how Spiro Rosados, who's our, you know, common second year director, did all the stunts. And then, yeah, and then we rebuild that story with you know, Kelly Matsumoto, who's our editor, and Dylan Highsmith, our editors, and they're everybody's like, so like this crew, this team that I, you know, inherited is just like the greatest team in Hollywood. And yeah, I just loved projecting myself 13 years back.
It's a little bit what I wanted to ask you about too, is stepping into the team, because, you know, there's people who have worked on this franchise for so long. Did it have a feel of almost like joining, the Yankees?
Say it. Family. That's what you wanted to say. Family.
Joining a family. Yes. No, I wanted to say like a team operating at the highest level, you know, that you could kind of throw something at them and just marvel at what they can do.
You're exactly right. Yeah. I'm not a big sports guy, so I won't use the analogy because I'm terrible at it. But yes, it's exactly that. And I'm like the new guy that comes in. And, you know, I've worked with some of them, but separately, some actors, but separately. This is a completely gelled, perfect team, knowing how to move. You're moving at one, as one, ready also to change you change directions any moment, like really able to give their best any moment. So obviously, I came in late, but I had all my ideas. So I could not just say, well, you know, let's go with what was planned. I said, what I'd love to do here is this. No problem. Let's go. There was never a moment when I was not given the best of what they could give me. Greatest crew in Hollywood. I have nothing but love for them.
Dom tells Han in one very important scene that it's all about passing your skills down to the next generation. You know, you're essentially working to make them better so that they can continue to improve on things. And I'm wondering if there was ever a veteran director or filmmaker who passed you valuable information along the way that you're maybe still using to this day and even made you better working on Fast X.
Yeah, very much so. No, absolutely very much so. So I grew up in a family made of filmmakers. My dad was an actor who was actor in one movie, but then became a director, an AD and then a director. My mom's a costume designer. My godmother's an actress. Like, you know, I grew up in the movie business. So I've met so many amazing directors, actors throughout the years, from Alain René to Jean-Paul Rapneau to Robert Altman to Ilya Kazan to so many incredible directors. But I didn't know I would become a director. So, you know, now that I know, like, ah. And then I started working with great directors. I worked with my first movie. I mean, I worked as PA. I mean, I saw Brian De Palma shoot something. I saw John McTiernan shoot something. But like, I was a PA. Like, I worked closely. But as an AD or evolving AD, I worked with Jean-Pierre Jeunet. You know, I was an amazing French director. And frankly, the man, my truly big brother of cinema, of directing, is Luc Besson. Like, he's the one that saw me, that recognized something in me and just made me a director. I was just a bumbling, you know, movie journeyman. You know, I would do like, you know, like, yeah, I'd be an AD here. I'd be a stagehand operator there. I'd be this. I just love being a part of the wonderful just industry that filmmaking is. But he was like, you're a storyteller. You're a filmmaker. And he gave me my, first of all, he said he made me come closer. He welcomed me in his inner circle and in his creative process. So I saw that. And then one day, as I was sort of like dipping my toes and shooting like, you know, an insert of this, insert of that, it just literally like, you know, kicked me in the deep end of the pool and gave me a movie, Transporter, the first Transporter, mm-hmm. and said, yeah, go for it. You're ready. But I was 26, very, very young. 20, you know, movie came out when I was 26, so I was 25. Yeah. So that's very young. I wish I'd been, I still hope to, that's why I'm producing a lot these days, because I just love to work with other, you know, with Lord and Miller, with like, you know, different directors that like, you know, I'm like, I produce, and by producing, I mean, I spy on them.
Yeah. Absorb as much as you can. I mean, honestly,
I'm like, they tell me, yeah, they come to me with your ideas and they email. I was like, very interesting. Yes.
It's one of those things that you can only get better at by doing it, you know, yeah. directing, or like you said, putting yourself in a position to watch others do it and maybe take some ideas.
Yeah. I mean, you know, completely. You're right. Absolutely. Like the physical moment of directing, but you know, you're not a director until it's like after Transporter I was not a director, after Unleashed I was not. It's like yes, I've done movies, but it's hard to you have to really understand you can be one type of director or you can be an evolving director, and I hope that's why I'm more of an evolving director. Like every time I do something I learn, and that's why when you look at my resume, it's so weird. Like, it's like, you know, it's just a guy that has no career path. You know, it's like, you know, it's like, you know, he's like, yeah, I'm not like looking at, I'm not saying, oh, I'm going to do this today, get to this to, you know, to, I'm like, I work, my passion guides me, my passion for the material, my passion for an actor, my passion for a theme. That's what guides me. Yeah. And then the last thing also is like, you know, keep watching movies. So many people in our industry stop watching movies. Like they're a filmmaker, they're movie makers, but or TV or, you know, whatever, but they don't see the stuff. And that's, you have to be curious. I think what makes a director is that we are curious. We want to tell story. We want to, you know, we're sponges. We want to, you know, it's not like me, Louis telling you what needs to happen. It's me, Louis taking a theme, like for example, Fast, and shaping it the way I see it. And then offering it to an audience and the audience giving me what they love or not, you know, what they think of it. Mm-hmm.
You know, you and I are the exact same age, and I would imagine that we grew up on a lot of the same movies. And I kind of bring that up because to me, the Fast films have evolved with each new film, in my opinion, to become the equivalent of our modern day sort of Bond series. Right. And I would almost I think you and I, they have this globetrotting aspect of it. They're exaggerated to a certain extent. Most of them are only as good as their particular villain. And, you know, our wheelhouse would have been sort of the Moonraker, Octopussy, View to a Kill type thing. Did you look to them at all when seeking inspiration? Am I completely reaching when I connect those two?
No, you're not reaching. Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, maybe not Moonraker. It's true. Like Moonraker is a very special space in my, you know, place in my heart. But it's like if you look at it now, you're like, really? Yes. I mean, I also wanted to come back, you know, stay away from what other people do so well, Bond, Mission Impossible, the sort of like spy of it all, and come back to more of a human story, how one person or group of individuals with the right moral compass and knowing what, you know, what truth means to them, what freedom means to them, go through to defend what they believe in, you know. So I did away with the agency so much, you know, like, I mean, they're still there and everything, but I did away with the spy tech a little bit and all that stuff and went back to more human themes. Mm. But it's true that globetrotting aspect, it's the way, you know, in a sense, Fast has evolved with the world. The world in you know, 1997 when they started conceiving FAST, you know, when, you know, 2001 when it came out, was, you know, a little bit closed in, you know, and then, you know, internet came and just, you know, we opened up and then we watched movies from different things and different areas and different, mm-hmm. different people. And we started talking to each other and be interested in politics from there. And I think the world has, when the, you know, the sort of like geopolitical interests were very much contained to the spy genre, now it's widened up because our reality is global, you know. Mm-hmm. What you do, Sean, today will impact and, you know, affect somebody in West Africa tomorrow. You know they'll listen to your podcast and be, you know, so it feels like now the world has evolved, and I think the individuals can make a change, you know, can make a difference, and mm-hmm. and our agents of change. You know, it's not because there's a giant spy agency that, you know, the world changed. No, if you together are fighting for the truth, and, you know, you will affect the change. So I think it's this. I think that's what FAST is now, and where we are. And that's why I was very confident in saying that we can do away with the spy tech and the giant agency stuff and go back to very much zooming in on the individuals.
Even when the God's eye gets passed around to different people, it's not like a significant thing. It's just like, oh, here it is. Move it along.
Well, because God's eye, when he came up, God's eye, when he came out was truly modern, almost sci-fi. And now it's a true reality that, you know, even you have access to. So like, facial recognition and, you know, it's in every airport, every bus station, frankly, in, you know, every mall, every street that you go in, you know, so that's not sci-fi anymore. It's reality.
Oh, there's that line when they end up in London. And I think they say, oh, great, you picked the city with the most cameras.
It's true. But it's true. Like you look up in London, there's like cameras everywhere. You're tracked everywhere. So it's kind of like, you know, we live in a world of sci-fi. Now, what really makes a difference in today's world, and that's what makes people different, and, you know, with the voice that they have on the internet, is who you are deep inside, your moral compass, and how you behave, and how, you know, what's the truth, and what's what you're thinking, you know, what are you thinking, you know, how altruistic are you, can you defend, chase a giant bomb down the streets of Rome to save the people that, you know, you don't know, but just at least, you know, that, you know, are of their own life and family, everything, that, you know, fight for the truth, fight for the right stuff.
You know, there's so many familiar faces in the franchise, obviously, and they expand with each new one. But there's an actor that I'm going to guess you don't get asked about a lot, but who I'm just in love with, and that's Alan Ritchson. You talk about what he brings to the project. I love him in the Jack Reacher show, and I think he looks like he belongs in the Fast universe when we meet him here. He just looks to me like such a charismatic actor. What is he like as a collaborator?
He's incredible. He was, you know, everybody had their stub dates and you know, they came in, came out, everything. Alan started the day I started on set and then finished the day I finished. He was my true collaborator, like during the entire process with Vin Diesel. Like we saw each other every day. We were on, you know, that bridge scene, like, you know, we shot it in several pieces and, you know, we were there. He's the most amazing specimen of a man, of an actor that there is. It, you know, I was in, you know, so we saw each other again at the premiere, everything, but I was warning people. I was telling, like, you're about to see someone like you've never, you know, an actor like you've never witnessed before, because not only is he 6'5", you know, 250 pounds of lean muscles, he's got the perfect smile, soulful eyes, an amazing, you know, family man. He's the loveliest guy. And to top it all, the most brilliant of actors. His first day jet lagged, upset, was, you know, on set, was that first scene where he tells the story and everything. Pages and pages and pages of dialogue, looking, obviously nothing, because that stuff had to be comped in afterwards. Mm. And he just like nailed it. Gave him like some alts. He just nailed them every time. It's just like the love. It's so beautiful to see it happened to me before. Like it happened to me once or twice before. When you see the birth of a superstar, I'm not saying a star, a birth of a man, of a woman, that's going to change rule cinema and change cinema forever. Yeah. And that's Alan Richardson. Like every day, I was in awe of his performance every day. Like, you know, I'd seen Richard, you know, I'd seen him, you know, in Ninja Turtles, but, you know, obviously, but like, I was not like, you know, it's so rare to discover a movie star. You know, it happened to me a few times before, but this was truly exceptional.
I was going to say, can you name another example? Another one jumped to mind.
Well, yeah, I met him again on this one, Jason Statham. Like, you know, when we, you know, Jason Statham who was a really fun, but, you know, secondary character of the Guy Ritchie universe in Snatch. And we decided to cast him in The Transporter, and just the charisma, this thing that comes out of them, that oozes out of them and impregnates it, sort of makes this your movie more than just a movie, but a star vehicle. That happened, yeah, with me, with Jason. And I met, like, you know, I met Chris Hemsworth in the beginning of his career. That was the same thing. Like, you see these people, you see them, and they're, you know, and you know where the thing also, they're all so nice.
Really?
Like, they're so, like, no one, you know, you hear all these stories of, like, you know, that actor is the worst and everything. They're all so nice and hardworking and exceptional. And they fit so well in a giant ensemble, like Fast, like, mm-hmm. where everybody gives their best, works really hard. It's not because you have won two Oscars, EGOT winners, giant superstars, and they're welcome. They're part of the team, the family, yeah. Forever. No, Alan is a. Yeah, watch out, world. Alan Richardson is coming for you.
Yeah, he's amazing. I have to ask if the studio had any kind of pushback, Louis, for the scene with the corpses in the toenail painting.
No, they forced me to put it in. They asked me to put it. Not forced me. They asked me to put it in.
Yeah,
I shot it almost as a joke, not really as a joke, but like almost as a, oh, it wouldn't be great as a DVD extra or as a thing, you know, for a long version, I think, because I was like, oh, but you always see Dante's character, you know, Dante in his, as a peacock, you know, always like, you know, showboating for the world, always doing this stuff. And I was like, how is he, like, is he that crazy? How is he intimately, you know, what's his everyday life? And just to, you know, create a close with his two nerdy, tech guys from Cypher, and just, like, you know, finishing that story, I thought it was really funny. So I asked, and then I put it in. We started test screening it, and then frankly, the studio was like, "Yeah, we have to put it in. It's crazy. Let's do it."
All right, they're telling me I'm out of time. I just want to ask: are you officially signed on for the next one, for Fast 11?
100%. I mean, we already started working. It's an amazing opportunity. I've directed 2/3 of a Fast and Furious movie. I've never prepped one, so I'm excited to to go around the world and to pick the locations and to get excited. And now it's to have Vin Diesel as a partner, to have Universal Studios as partners, and our amazing producers, and, you know, Michelle. I mean, this cast, as I told you, it's like they see each other all the time. We see each other all the time. We hang out, we WhatsApp, we text, we just, like, we're one. And just to be able to not come in as a journeyman director that says, you know, good luck with the thing, just, like, to really come in, and frankly, as a fan, to be able to bring this franchise to what we all think is going to be the apex of with the ending, is the most, I mean, it's the most incredible and task that I was given as a director. So I will not mess it up, I promise you.
Louis, it was a real pleasure to have you on the show, man. It's always great to get a chance to talk to you. And we'd love to get you back on for everything that you do moving forward. So please stay in touch.
Oh, you're amazing. Thanks. And then I do want to hang out in your room because it's amazing.
You're welcome anytime. Open invitation.
And happy birthday very soon. Big one for us.
Yes, exactly. Mine's February. When is yours?
June
7th. Oh, you're really coming up on it.
Very coming.
Okay. Yeah. Well, good luck. Congratulations, my friend.
All right. Thanks. Talk soon.
All right. Take care.
Bye, Sean.
Bye.
Talk soon.
Mike Rowe here with a radical idea. If you want to see more companies make more things in this country, buy more things from more companies who make things in this country. I refer in this case to the incredible t-shirts, sweatshirts, blue jeans, and more made by my friends at American Giant. Everything American Giant makes is made in the United States. And right now, you can take 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com/Mike. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
You've worked hard for what you have, your money, your assets, your 401k, and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly one in four consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.
And we are back. Of course, thank you so much for Louis Leterrier for joining the show. And he is, of course, welcome back anytime. He will be doing Fast 11. And so hopefully we'll get him back for the show when
that's 10 and
happens.
A half. What are they calling it?
Yeah, well, Fast 10.5. Yeah, our friend Naz was on the carpet in Rome. I think she got the exclusive that this is going to be a trilogy.
Yeah.
Because we all thought it was going to be two parts, and now it's going to be a trilogy. Listen, I don't care. They can make 30 of these. I will keep going. I mean, they're clearly the audience wants to see these, and apparently, from what you guys have told me, this feeds exactly what I want as a fan. So,
if
take 20 more, man, I don't care.
If they end up making it 4 instead of 3, can we refer to this one as 10 and 1/4 mile?
that's pretty funny.
Yeah. I wanted to ask him if he knew the title of 11, but
that's funny.
It's probably too soon.
You have to give them credit, by the way, with these movies, because I don't remember the exact linear order, but it's like 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, 3, 4. I don't remember how it goes, it jumps all over the place in terms of timeline. But like, they've really done a good job with the titles. Like, I love that the first one's The Fast and the Furious, and then the fourth one was Fast and Furious, and then sometimes they don't use Furious. Like, this one doesn't have it.
Furious 7.
Fast and Furious 7. Yeah.
And I'll tell you even again, Kev, there is a moment in the middle of this one where you reach a point that you've already watched. And
cool. I love that when that happens. Like, you talking about the timeline.
Yeah.
Cool.
And you'll be like, oh, wait, I saw this. Now that's we're cool. at it. Kind of thing.
I like that. Really,
yeah, it's fucked up. All right. So between Fast X, which is a very easy title, we have now have the incredibly long title Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 with a new trailer that just dropped recently. I mean, there's nothing else that they could show me that will get me more on board with
I didn't need another trailer. I'll say that about this.
Same. Yeah,
for sure.
I got to point this out. I said this to you guys in the thread. This was one of the funniest things I ever seen. Someone online makes these parody accounts for like these film Twitter sites. And remember the Dune one? Like it was like breaking news. This was like a parody. It was like breaking news. Dune Part 2 being divided into two films. It'll be Dune Part 2 Part 1 and Dune Part 2 Part 2. Yeah. I thought that was so brilliant. Anyway. Anyways, Dead Reckoning Part 1.
Here's the thing I love about this trailer. I still have no clue what the story is. And same.
This trailer felt very James Bond going up against Spectre, Blofeld. Like, it felt like I know that Ethan Hunt is the James Bond, you know, mirror to in America kind of thing.
Right.
But this one felt very James Bond.
There's also an element too where like one of the guys says about Ethan, like the world is going to be coming for you. And they show what looked to be a series of like assassin type characters, because Pom Klementieff was in some of the footage I saw at CinemaCon, and she just looks like a lunatic in a gun for hire type thing. And it makes me wonder if there's like a bounty put on Ethan's head where everybody's trying to take him out.
I saw a tweet today that actually was smart, and I'm trying to remember who wrote it, but it was actually interesting. They said in the last four Mission films, and this is actually true because I love this series, we don't really, who's he been fighting the last four movies? If you actually think about it, we go to these movies because the action's great, the stunts are great, the filmmaking's great, the storytelling's great. I mean, yeah. The performances are amazing. But it is a strange thing to think about when I watched the new trailer today. It's like, who is he fighting against? Like, do you remember who he fought in 4 and 5 and 6?
So loosely, it's this group called the Syndicate.
Correct.
And Henry Cavill's character, you know, was a part of the Syndicate. And the other one is Sean. I don't remember the man's last name.
That guy was great. That guy is great. He was from The Green Knight. Remember, he was he's amazing actor.
Outstanding. Yeah. And he's kind of been in each of them as like a representative. I think there's a bigger organization. Like for Bond, it's Spectre. And I kind of think for Mission, it's this Syndicate. But you're right. It's always like, and whatever they have to get is always some kind of just a MacGuffin, you know, right, to keep them moving sort of deal. But, I mean, Fast has a very similar thing. Like, exactly. I rewatched Fast 9 and there was like a piece that they had to retrieve kind of thing. Yeah. And it will, if it falls into the wrong hands, it's going to be extremely deadly kind of thing. So,
and the Fast films, Fast and Mission, and again, you could talk about quality all you want, but they're, you know, they're similar in a sense that, you know, it's just the next one's upping the next one, the action, the characters that you love and the team and the group together. This trailer, though, I'm with Gabe. I didn't think it was necessary. I actually will say, weirdly, and again, I'm not trying to get into a negative CGI discussion here, but the train falling at the end of that trailer did not look super great. I don't know if the effects are done on that yet, but when you're watching a film that has so many practical effects and actual stunts, like you see Tom Cruise drive off that cliff on the motorcycle and then you see a CG shot later, there is like it's a strange thing because you have to use CG for things that are absolutely impossible to pull off, of course. Sure. Yeah. But at the same time, listen, I'm all in. I'm very much in. I will say that the stunts that he's done in the past Mission films excited me more than some of the ones I've seen so far in this. Now, the motorcycle jump is amazing, but
were you disappointed that we saw the finished, like we didn't see the whole scene, but given that they already released like this is the big stunt behind the scenes, I was a little disappointed to see so much of that already.
I think the good news to your point there will be how it's going to look in IMAX.
Absolutely. It'll feel different at that scale. Or even just a regular screen. Like it'll definitely still work.
But fairly confident that base jump
is the beginning.
Is how he's getting onto the train. I think he has to base jump to land onto the on the train.
Makes sense to me.
I think.
Then does he Spider-Man the train?
he might actually do that.
Listen, at the end of the day, Macquarie, like Mangold, I have absolutely no worries. I'm sure it's going to be amazing. I'm still a Ghost Protocol guy and I love Rogue Nation. I will defend John Woo's Mission Impossible 2 if you want to fight me on that.
I've got Tom Cruise hair right now, Mission Impossible 2.
You definitely do.
Yes, you're growing it out.
But in all honesty, like, you think about the filmmakers who have been involved in these projects. I mean, I always forget De Palma started the film series. And, you know, you think about how different these movies have gotten. They've, you know, they've gotten to that quote unquote Fast and Furious level of insanity. Like every time they're talking.
Okay, but still very grounded.
You're not wrong. Yeah. But I mean, I think to me with Fast, though, is the character's grounded, even though it's insane. But in this trailer, I'm with Gabe. Like the trailer actually didn't blow me away, but I think I'm already so sold that I don't need it. But I watched it for work.
Let me ask a question. Because one of the things, and I guess we'll talk about this in the Fast review section, but I appreciated a new director's voice, even just in little choices that he made to give you Fast, but give you Fast in a different way. Love McQuarrie. McQuarrie's amazing. Is there any part of you guys that wishes that another filmmaker got a crack at a mission movie the way that early on they were doing that?
I think the biggest problem is Cruise probably wouldn't do it without him.
Probably.
Sure.
Because they're so synonymous now. I mean, McQuarrie had a huge part in Top Gun with the writing and he was on the carpet. But imagine
Tom Cruise paired with Guy Ritchie to make a Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah. I mean, something like that.
But also this, not just what Mission would get, but can I get Christopher McQuarrie doing something else?
Yeah. Right. Yes. I mean, exactly.
I'm disappointed in these, but also I know that he's capable of blowing me away in some.
Because think about the J.J. Abrams one. The J.J. Abrams one kind of fits apart from everything else, and it's terrific. It has a slick TV feel to it, but it's amazing.
My first of all, Philip Seymour Hoffman's so good in that. Second of all, that third one
Sorry, Kev, just put that. That's the pull quote for anything he stars in.
Yeah.
Philip Seymour Hoffman is so good in that.
He's awesome. But Mission 3 still has one of my favorite Mission action sequences, the scene on the bridge. Mm-hmm. And I remember there's like this phenomenal shot when the missile hits the bridge and Cruise just gets blown back on this car. And I will never forget seeing that for the first time. It blew my mind. And then you go on the protocol and everything. But listen, I mean, I think we're all in on this show. We love McQuarrie. We love practical effects. It looks great. Rebecca Ferguson's going to be awesome. Oh, I do want to mention the shot in the trailer that did excite me was that one where the train maybe had crashed and they were lifted off the ground in slow motion.
Oh, yeah.
That looked really cool.
Was that Hayley Atwell or was that Rebecca Ferguson? I think it might have been Hayley Atwell.
I felt throughout the trailer there was a lot of like, which one was that? Who was that? Maybe it was just because it was very action heavy. But that shot was awesome.
I feel about the Mission team the way that Kevin feels about the Fast family. Like,
sure.
I'm fired up to spend more time with Ving Rhames and Simon Pegg and Rebecca Ferguson. And I just think that they're terrific.
So. Is this the only thing Ving Rhames is doing? Just Mission films? Because obviously we all know him as Marcellus Wallace from Pulp Fiction and like a lot of great films from that time period. But I only feel like I ever see Ving Rhames show up in Mission movies, which he's great in. But I don't know. Is he doing anything else?
He was a voice in Wendell and Wild.
Okay.
Oh.
He was in a TV miniseries this year called Legacy, was in a movie called The Locksmith, and he has 5 upcoming titles. 2 of them are Mission Impossible. 1 of them is Garfield.
Oh, jeez.
And Chris Pratt's voicing Garfield, right?
Probably.
I think he is actually voicing Garfield.
No, I'm pretty sure he is.
I think you're right about that.
I believe you.
I think you're right about that. All right. So we also saw, or most people got to see, the Indiana Jones clip that was shown to me at both Star Wars Celebration and CinemaCon. I have weighed in on it. Gabe, you have something interesting to pull from this clip. So to set people up, it is an extended version of the car chase scene, essentially, that we have seen in the Indiana Jones thing where Phoebe Waller-Bridge and Indy are racing along in these mini scooter-esque type things. And they are trying to retrieve the Dial of Destiny from Mads Mikkelsen's character as he races away in a car. And my commentary was a bit about the green screen, which I find very jarring. In the way that they cut back and forth between what does look like a very practical chase. And then when they have to get up closes of the actors, it feels like very much something that was shot in a studio And I think that there's a way you can blend those two together better than what I'm seeing so far. But Gabe, you saw something that really
you saw this at CinemaCon on a big screen, though, didn't you?
I did. Yeah. I did.
OK. Yeah. Because my theory was like, I wonder if it's just because I'm looking at this on my laptop or my phone. I don't disagree with you on how that looks. But I know that a lot of the conversation was getting tied up on us but like on Twitter and in general. About like, ooh, what if the effects aren't great in this and that's really distracting? And that's a fair criticism if that's what the finished movie looks like. But I think the reason that they keep showing this clip, at least to me and what this clip told me, is that that felt like Indiana Jones.
Okay.
Like that felt like it didn't feel like, you know, not that Mangold's not gonna make it his own. I mean, he's making a movie. You have to follow your instinct. You can't just, you know, call up Steven Spielberg and say, what would have you done? Not really the job. But to me, this felt like he was very conscious about the world of Indiana Jones, the style of Indiana Jones, all the way down to where he's like placing his camera underneath the cars. That isn't, you know, maybe it's informed by Ford v Ferrari, but it feels the way he's moving his camera around this car chase like an Indiana Jones film. But it's also paced and staged like an Indiana Jones chase, where like they're hitting stuff in the town to interact with the chase. He's jumping from car to car and it feels that sort of loose, you know, is he going to fall? Is he barely going to make it? Mm-hmm. Let alone he's, you know, 70 something years old or 80. How old is Harrison Ford now?
He'll be 80 when it opens, I believe.
Yeah. So it's wow. To me, I don't disagree with the CGI of it, but I think the reason that they keep showing it and maybe why they believe in that clip so much is, to me, I was like, that just feels like Indiana Jones. And not that I had any worries with Mangold. I am only reassured that I'm going to sit down and feel like I'm on another indie adventure. And I think that's all we really want at the end of the day, is that feeling.
Sean brings up exactly kind of how I feel like we have no problem with CGI. We know that it's a part of filmmaking. It's going to distract you.
Yeah.
Right. And I think one of the things that, you know, I see comments sometimes, you know, people are like, you know, you're knocking CGI. I'm like, no, it's genuinely about the idea of immersion. Like what Sean's talking about is exactly my point. When you're watching a movie, if you're watching a scene and you're in it, right, you're in it, you're in the chase, and all of a sudden your mind goes, oh, that's a green screen. Like that's the worst thing that could happen for an audience member in terms of like immersion break, because you're then have to reset yourself emotionally to get back into it subconsciously, consciously, however you want to do it. And I think with the idea of filmmakers these days really leaning into practical, like Jordan Peele and Chris Nolan and even J.J. Abrams and a lot of these filmmakers doing so much practically, Tarantino, we have examples of major films that do major action on a practical scale. Or like, you know, I mentioned Interstellar a lot, like he didn't use green screen on that. He just projected images of space outside the windows to make it look like the
Damien did that in First Man, too.
Exactly. And I think like one thing I will say, look at what ILM's doing with like Mando, those gigantic screens. Yes. Yeah. Right. And sure. They look phenomenal. Like and these are obviously being done in a studio. You have these flying sequences that look outstanding. You know, you mentioned Damien in First Man. That's how they did like the moon landing and things like that. You just have it on a screen in front of you, put the set piece there, and then you film to the image. And again, going back to this point about indie, I do find it frustrating when I see a shot like that, because this is not me standing on a high horse and going, oh, come on, guys, CGI, practical effects. No, no, no. There's got to be a way to make it cleaner. And that's Sean's point is exactly what I'm talking about, is like there's got to be some way. Like, for example, again, I'm not there. I haven't seen the scene altogether. But if I'm filming Harrison Ford in a chase scene, and if we have the availability of screens to have images passing by him that we could put in front of him to make it not look like a green screen, I'm just trying to figure out what options they have. Maybe it could have been a filming thing. It could have been a timing thing. You never know.
I think you have to assume that between Spielberg producing
their best,
it being Disney that has all the resources, it being Mangold, it's not his first rodeo. They did the best that you have to think that they did the.
Yeah.
They went the best option.
Like that's,
but
look in at look, this. In yeah. this movie, they are what seems to be very successfully de-aging Harrison Ford.
Right.
It looks great into a 1940s scene. So you can't tell me that they don't have the resources to make this chase look more credible. It's almost like going back to like the 50s and 60s when you saw a conversation happening in a car. And, it's very clearly a screen going past kind of thing. Like, I've seen behind the scenes videos of movies where people have been in a setting. And when I see the behind the scenes shot and I realize that they're in a studio someplace, or it's been whatever's their environment around them is not where they were, I'm like, damn, that looked incredible. Yeah. I really believed you people were there. And
rear projection. I mean, stuff like that was so interesting. I know we got to move on. And one of the things I will say is that, like, I think Mangold, like Gabe said, probably did the best he could in terms of that. But we do see a lot of examples these days of things that, you know, and there's so many phenomenal CGI artists out there and CGI companies like Weta Digital and ILM and who work their asses off. I think some of the best CGI I've ever seen was in Pacific Rim. Sure. We had Del Toro on for that. Yeah. I mean, there's just there. And again, I know it's very different, but it just takes you out a little bit.
Yeah. But I think what we've been running into the last few years with CGI, wondering like, why does it feel like it's plateaued, where we're getting, you know, it felt like for a long time it just kept getting better and better, and I'm sure it is always getting better and better, but I think what we're realizing is that, you know, we call practical effects, but there is still a practicality to visual effects, to CGI, that it's not an infinite resource, you don't have an infinite amount of time, and so it's always productions are always going to run into that. Who knows why this looks that way? Who knows if it's going to look that way once it's done? Like, I'm curious. That's one note that I'm curious, people coming out of Cannes screening, like, if that's going to be a part of the conversation, or if it's just,
well, because it was a problem with the fourth one. Like, that was an issue with the fourth one, is that I felt like they were relying too heavily on visual effects to cheat his age. And now you're coming back 10 years later where he's that much older and we're still going to see a situation where they're trying to work their way around it. I want to get to this weekend.
The point you made, though, about the de-aging, though, is fascinating, because that looks, I do want to say, that looks spectacular.
Terrific.
Like, I'm when they took his that cover off his face in the first trailer, I my jaw hit the floor. I'm like, de-aging. That's unbelievable. It's AI. They're using literally actual images from Lucasfilm from like that time period of Ford's life when he played Indy, I'm assuming Han Solo too, and the AI is then taking his performance from the older Ford on set and taking those older images and manipulating them to move.
It's wild.
It's the craziest. That's where I think AI is interesting. We can get into a whole AI rant later on in a different topic, because I'm very much against the whole like AI being used for like everything in the world, but for little things like that, like a little tool.
Sure.
Cool.
This weekend movies, there's a documentary that's coming to Apple TV Plus. It's already available. Yeah. Okay. I started watching it at Kevin's recommendation and I was so engrossed in it. It's tremendous how it was made. I think Michelle and I made it about 30, 45 minutes into it before we had to start. It's called Still. And it's basically Michael J. Fox's story, as told by him, essentially, to Davis Guggenheim, who's an incredible documentary filmmaker. And they use footage, recreations, and existing footage from Michael J. Fox's early work to put together his story. Kev, you finished the whole thing and got an incredible opportunity to talk to Michael J. Fox. Start there. Tell us about getting a chance to sit across from him.
Yeah, it was wild. And like when I got the email, like 5 days before the interview, they were like, hey, we want you to come to New York to interview Michael J. Fox. I'm like, that what? Like, I just didn't think I'd ever have a chance to sit down with him. You know, obviously he means a lot to everybody in our childhoods and things like that. But that documentary, what's interesting is I was really nervous before I watched the doc, and then I watched the documentary, and one of the things you learn in the documentary, Michael J. Fox talks about this idea of not pitying him, and when you're speaking to him, just speak to him like you would at any time in his life, or if you had met him 30 years ago. And so going into that room, I wanted to honor that aspect of just sitting down with him and just having a conversation, which is exactly what I did. And I was nervous, don't get me wrong. I had 6 minutes with him. It ended up going 8. He was incredible. I had my Frighteners ticket. from the 90s, cool. which yeah. I love. And he was so giving in his answers. And one of the things that Sean brings up about the documentary, which is really brilliant, is how it's edited. And Davis Guggenheim essentially interviews him off camera, and Michael J. Fox is on camera. But it's so cool. It's partially an actor reenacting things. Mm-hmm. Then it's partially real footage of his movies using that to guide the story of his life.
And brilliantly, like there's a sequence where they're cutting back and forth to illustrate how he had to work on Family Ties and Back to the Future at the exact same time. And the way that they cut into, like, he'll walk into a scene on Family Ties and then explain like where he was. And then he's quick in the episode. He's like, I got to go. And then they show like the reenactment of him going to Back to the Future. Yeah. It's incredible.
It's honestly one of the best documentaries I've ever seen. And I know we got to move on. I one thing I'll say about it, the best compliment I can give it is that it feels like you're watching a movie it feels like you're watching a narrative feature rather than a documentary is what I mean. Mm-hmm. And it's like the way the story is told, there's like an arc to it and you're like on edge and like it's really interesting kind of to watch it and then to cut back to him in present day and kind of have him guide us through it. And then his memoir is used as well. And it's really a fascinating film. Highly recommend it. The Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's Research, by the way, is like they've raised nearly $2 billion and they've made some massive breakthroughs. And I just urge everybody to watch it, at least for the awareness, to bring awareness to it and how you can help at all. I will say this and then we'll move on. When I sat down with him, dude, one of the most positive, like interesting, engaging, listening, talking about how much he loves his wife and his kids and the optimism that he's gained from this experience.
Amazing.
We can all learn a lot from sitting down with someone and listening to how they've taken something in their life and turned it into something positive and something good. And I think he says it's the gift that keeps on taking, because obviously it's taking a toll on him physically, but he's mentally just right there. He's very engaged. So I was very honored for that opportunity. If people want to watch the interview, it's on my Instagram, but check out the documentary. It's on Apple TV Plus, and it is a remarkable, remarkable doc.
All right, let's take a really quick break. And on the other side, we're going to talk about Fast X and give our review.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
And we are back. Okay, so as Kevin mentioned earlier, the big movie that everybody's going to be going to this weekend is Fast X, a film that's projected to potentially make over $300 million globally. Gabe and I were able to see it. Kevin hasn't had a chance to yet see it. Kev, do you want to take your earbuds out? We're not going to get into any kind of spoilers or...
No, but I just to give some quick context, Jake and I were in New York on the day it screened. We were interviewing Gordon Ramsay for his Fox TV show. So the night it screened, Sean and Gabe went. The Fast and Furious fan in me was very jealous, but I'm seeing it tomorrow. We're recording this Wednesday. I'm seeing it Thursday. So I'll post a little review or a blurb on my Twitter on Friday if anybody's interested in my thoughts on it, or I can just give it next week. So you guys... Perfect. Take it away.
All right. So my take on it is that there are better Fast and Furious movies and there are definitely worse Fast and Furious movies. And I hate to just kind of come across as like it falls in the middle for me, but it kind of falls in the middle for me. I thought that there were some really fun things that I enjoyed and I went along with the silliness of it. I think the Rome sequence that you see in the trailer is remarkable and it goes on for a lot longer than you anticipate. It has a lot of the fun, like only in a Fast and Furious movie would you see some of this stuff happen. I think I put this in my tweet, like it should be 85 to 90 minutes and it's instead 2 hours and 25 minutes.
If you could cut out at least a good 45 from that,
yeah,
it'd be a pretty incredible action movie.
Because there are like there are like long subplots that don't go anywhere. Like that's my biggest issue with the story in general, is that it's essentially a vengeance pick. It's Jason Momoa is mad at the Fast and Furious family and how is he going to punish them? And the movie by design separates the team. They have to go in different directions in order to complete the missions that they are on. And that happens a bunch of times in the Fast and Furious movies. A lot of times, like we saw Roman and Tej go to space, you know, in Fast 9 kind of thing. But by the end of it, I was more exhausted than I was enjoying myself. There was a point where I kind of just hit like, I was like, all right, this guy, this has to, what are we doing here kind of thing? But, you know, I love Cena. I thought John Cena was a ton of fun in it. And his little side mission was interesting, but didn't really add anything.
He's a lot better in this. He gets to be a lot better in this than in 9. In 9, he was playing a very different character.
I liked him in 9.
But in this one, he has his personality, I think.
Yes, he gets to be a fun uncle in this one, is the character he's playing. Okay. Instead of like... You know,
the bad guy,
the guy dressed in all black,
mad Toretto.
Yeah.
Because he switches his arc at the end of 9, right? Like he goes good at the end of 9 during
they make,
that.
They
like,
make up. I think yeah, kind of where yeah. it ends up, if I yeah. remember.
And it's almost like, but it's gotten to the stage where this one in particular is just a series of character introductions. And each of the character introductions is just a fight sequence.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, here's Mia. And then she's in a big fight sequence. And then here's John Cena's character and he's in the same fight sequence. And then they meet Jason Statham. And then there's a big fight sequence and Letty meets Cypher. And then there's a huge fight sequence. And it's sounds fine. Awesome. Yeah. I mean, it's fine. I really do think if you've enjoyed the Fast and Furious movies up till this point, you will not have the same exact problems that I had with it. I thought it was fine. I wanted it to be better. I think that to me, and we'll talk about the Blend Game next, that like 5 and 7 kind of exist on another level. And I'm not quite sure if we'll get another movie that reached those two. But to me, it falls in a realm of like the 2-6 kind of range. So Gabe, you
I like Kevin, it more? Kevin, you'll be maybe glad to hear this. It is. I had a lot more fun with it. I won't say it's better than I thought it was going to be, but I had a lot more fun with it than I expected.
That makes me happy because Gabe is kind of over the years we've been on the show, like he checked out a Fast and Furious a while back. And so if Gabe is saying it's actually decent,
it's like if my relationship with Fast and Furious, like I'm going through the stages of grief. I think I'm at acceptance. And so it's, you know, I'm not quite as bothered as I used to be. Yeah. That or I've been numbed to it at this point. But it was, the parts of it that are fun are really fun. I liked that John Cena, I mean, it doesn't matter. That's the thing with Fast and Furious, with being critical of Fast and Furious. None of it matters. Like it's, you can't be like, well, this doesn't logically make, it's like, yeah, but that doesn't matter to this franchise. So it's not worth criticizing. But John Cena in the last movie and John Cena in this movie are two completely different human beings that just happen to look like John Cena. Like there's no continuity of character. Like they decided he's a different, he gets to act completely differently. But he's great in this and he gets to be the John Cena that I think we've all kind of fallen in love with. In recent years with some of his comedic stuff. Going into it, I felt that Momoa was either going to work or really not work. And it worked. Like it didn't work in like...
This is awesome.
It's not like he's like Joker level. Like this is one of the best villains in this, you know, because he's doing a very over the top, flamboyant and kind of like just very over the top villain. It's not that he does that to a sense that is like impressive, you know, in like a serious dramatic way. It's that he goes all in and doesn't like, he has no concern about being looking dumb, looking weird, looking funny, looking like it looks like, and hearing how some of the cast was talking about how every take he would do something completely different. It's really fun to just kind of exist in that reality of like, okay, Jason Momoa just got to kind of have fun and do whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm having fun thinking about like, man, I wish I could see like all the other takes of what he did here. Cause it's just fun. It's
not unhinged.
It's unhinged, but it's also just really silly and unpredictable and strange in a fun way.
Mm-hmm.
So all the things that I criticized the recent Fast stuff with, like the,
Also, wait, I'm sorry. He consistently throughout the movie calls Vin Diesel Dommy. I just think it's terrific.
It's fun.
Is that shot in the movie? I'm always a sucker for like the just like a racing scene. It's just straight up like old school like racing scene. Yeah. But there's just like this cool shot I saw in the trailer where the camera goes through a couple of the cars.
Yes, and that is in there.
They had done it before, but I just thought that shot looked really. Does that look cool in the movie? I thought that looked kind of cool in the trailer.
It looks good. Cool in the movie.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I will say one thing that was encouraging from our interview with Leterrier is he talked about his approach was to strip down some of the, he didn't use the word campy nature, but he's like stripped down some of the way that they use the agency and some of the spy, like over the top spy stuff and make it more of a human story. Mm-hmm. And he talked about being excited to, he says he feels like he's only made 2/3 of a Fast movie because he didn't get to prep this one. He shot it and did post-production. So he's talking about being in pre-production right now. And he's like, he's very excited to actually prep one and then shoot it and go around and pick his locations and stuff. So the fact that he is talking about it of like wanting, I don't think he used the word grounded, but wanting it to be more human and a little less of the over the top camp stuff is the sense that I got from his quote. Like, I'm excited to see what 11 is now with him kind of taking over full cloth. Who knows? But I was glad that I enjoyed it more than I expected. It's not that it's great, but I had fun with it. And I wasn't sitting down. I was like, am I going to regret the next 3 hours of my life? Like,
I didn't feel nine, that way at all.
Leaving nine, and I hate to talk about any movie like this, but leaving nine, I was like, man, I kind of regret that I sat down to watch that. It didn't work for me, but this one, I had a bit of fun. So it was encouraging for me.
How did it play with an audience?
I mean, ours was flat. Ours was pretty flat.
Ours was good. Was yours open? Did you have public?
Yeah, we had public.
We had open to the public as well. They were really responsive. Like, there was a lot of vocal reactions. This is a spoiler, so I won't say it. Actually, you kind of say it. I forget how you do it.
I say it in the interview. I dance around it.
I won't say it because I want Kevin to. There's a moment with Momoa's character that is very drastic. I'll just use the word drastic. I don't want to give Kevin any hints. That our audience was like, oh, they actually like kind of gasped, like, what?
Yeah.
Because it goes to a place that you're not really expecting.
It goes to like a Michael Bay's Pain and Gain type.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
In a really dark.
I'm intrigued.
Like when it happened, I was like, what are we doing?
It was like, wow.
What are we doing here? Kind of thing. Yeah, you'll see. So. You'll know it. So
I think Kevin, you'll have a good time with it. I think because of all the other stuff really works for you and the characters really work for you. And that's where I tend to check out is like, I'll give you my hot take. And I know we are running out of time in today's show. My hot take that I told Sean is, unfortunately, I think that if this franchise, like if they were going to continue to make Fast movies after this next, you know, 3 or 7 that they decide to end 10 on, I think that Fast without Dom could be a really, really great franchise because I feel too much it's relying on painting him as a hero, painting him as a superhero, and the story itself always having to come back to him. Mm. Whereas there's a lot of other interesting characters and great actors who are taking on these roles that are just kind of sidelined and only get so much of a story to tell versus it always having to come back to like, why is Dom the most important person in this? So if they're going to continue to make Fast movies, which I think if the next 3 make $1 billion, we're going to figure out a way to make more of them. I would love to see a version where Vin Diesel kind of passes the torch and maybe we get a little bit different, a different feel of a story that's not centered around Dom. Because that, to me, that's the central issue.
Are there 2 end credit scenes?
There's one. And then there's also one that feels like it should have been an end credit scene.
Okay. But so stay through the credits, though.
Stay through the credits. Okay. Yes. Cool. Stay through the credits.
Cool.
So our blend game this week is hashtag Fast and Furious blend. I mentioned during our tier list episode, which if you want to go back and listen to the tier list, that's the most recent episode that we did prior to this one. The only S tier that I gave the franchise was Fast 5. I really think Fast 5 was one of the ones where and I had given up with where Gabe was talking about giving up on the series. I gave up after Fast 4. Like Fast 4 to me was not well done and was kind of boring. And I was like, all right, I've seen all I need to see out of these movies. And then was so surprised at how much I enjoyed Fast 5 and everything about just the camaraderie of the team and the set pieces that they cooked up for it. And of course, the bank vault scene, which is it's so incredible and so ridiculous and just great. So I will have to stick with Fast Five as my blend game pick. Gabe, did you also agree with that? More?
So Fast Five, I said, go check out our tier list. I said that that's one I want to go back and rewatch because I had been checked out and I don't think I gave that necessarily a fair shake.
It's great.
Given that so many people talk about it so glowingly, I haven't seen it since it came out and I don't remember enough to be like, I'm particularly fond of it. I just kind of, from four on, I remember being checked out for the most part. So I think I'm going to go, I fully regret not giving this an S now because I'm going to say Tokyo Drift.
Tokyo Drift is my favorite. Oh, interesting.
I love the underrated first one and I gave my reasons last week about how important that one is. And yeah, Tokyo Drift to me is probably my favorite to rewatch and live with just because I love
it's fun.
I love the culture that it drops us into. I love those characters. It's weird in a fast way, but it's favorite of mine.
It's very strange that for the past 2 weeks we've been talking heavy fast and Kevin hasn't had a chance to really weigh in.
Yeah.
Being the legitimate flag waving Fast and Furious fan on this franchise. So Kev, where did you go for your pick for your favorite episode of the Fast saga up until this point?
See, for me, it's tough because favorite comes into play here very interestingly because I was working in a movie theater when the first one came out. So I went and saw it 9 times in theaters. I would literally get off work and go to the last show. I have all nine of those individual times that I saw it tickets still. The first one was because the first one came out at a time where like car shows and like my buddies and I would like go to a Best Buy parking lot and people would be showing off their Honda Civic SIs and like Toyota, you know, Celicas and like,
it's
you know,
so weird that you say that because Virginia is so big for car shows.
Huge.
You know, when I was living in Maryland and DC, like Virginia was enormous for car shows.
Massive. Like, dude, my buddy had a Honda Civic SI with like a 400 horsepower like turbo. It was unbelievable. I mean, my buddy had like a green Eclipse like they did in Fast and Furious.
The only reason that car is popular at all is that
movie. yeah and then the Toyota Supra from the original.
My dream car, which I'll never be able to afford, is a Skyline, which is his car, that blue and white
dude, the Skyline
GTR. They have a street legal now, like a newer one's GTR,
right? But and their right side drive, right? The old Skyline. Well, no,
now they
right.
So the 2019, I forget what year it was, they released a GTR that's finally street legal and like an American version. Yeah,
those are great cars. It's a Nissan, right? It's a Nissan, right?
Yeah.
So for me, Fast Five, I think, is the best movie of the bunch. Seven is my favorite, just because of the nature of what they had to deal with Paul Walker dying in the middle of production. Just to clarify, he didn't die while shooting the movie, he died outside of the production. But, you know, that was a really interesting because James Wan directed that. That also has some of my favorite action I've seen in Fast. Like the car skydiving sequence is unbelievable. I love that scene and the whole bit they do with Tyrese's character where he's scared and they use the, you know, the parachute and everything, and they parachute down into like this winding road for this massive action scene. But I also thought the last sequence in that film, the split off shot with Vin Diesel and Paul Walker. Mm-hmm. I think they used older footage of Paul Walker from one of the earlier Fast films. And I just thought that was one of the...
Is that when his, like, they superimposed it on his brother? Was his brother in that? Or is that...
Yeah, so Seven awesome. Is... But the scene at the end of Seven when they split off is an actual shot from Paul Walker from an earlier Fast film. It was such a tasteful way to do that, like the split off shot as they drove off, that, and I get the hair on my arm stands up when I think about that, because Paul Walker, you know, an underrated movie of his, by the way, Running Scared, if you haven't seen it. He was a big part of my life from high school forward. So, I mean, I was watching him in all these movies for years. And, you know, his passing was was big for me. I mean, I love this franchise. But the idea of his two brothers stepping in to film the rest of his scenes is just one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard in my life. Like, and I think his daughter is in the new one, Meadow, which I'm very excited to see.
She has a cool part. Yeah.
Which I'm very interested in seeing how they're going to play with that. But like, just, you know, and listen, like, I don't think that, you know, I think the way they use the brothers in Seven was just beautiful. I love Seven. I just find the action to be amazing. The reason why I feel Five is the best is because the way they utilize The Rock and Dwayne Johnson's character is just
God, yes.
epic. And in Seven, he was sidelined. I think Seven's the one where he's like in the hospital. He does come out at the end and he has a huge action scene. Seven emotionally is just my favorite. It's it's just a really beautiful tribute to Paul Walker, but while also still being an awesome fast film. Like that movie could have been really sad to watch. And to me, it was just it felt like uplifting and like celebrating him and the character and the action and the franchise. And like, it's such a good job with that. And I was very, very impressed. Is Seven also the one I'm trying in my mind? Seven's also the one where the car jumps out of the big building into the other building, right?
Yes.
Seven's Seven is awesome, man.
You know what I saw? Saw a picture from that sequence today, and I forget whatever party they had to infiltrate to get to those cars.
And the cars up in the 100th floor of the building.
Yeah. Dom is wearing a suit. And I thought, that's so, like, he should wear the non-Toretto gas station shirt more often, because when he was in a suit, it looked kind of cool. Like, him and Paul Walker were both in suits, and I know that they had to tear out through those.
You guys notice he's always flexing in every scene? You ever notice?
Really? Sure.
Oh, dude. Watching Fast 10.
I would, too, if I was on camera on IMAX.
It's distracting. Like, watching Fast 10, any scene where he's supposed to be at all, you know, like tense or whatever, watch his hands. Vin Diesel's hands are gripped so tight because he's just walking around fully flexing.
I know we're past it, and I know we're completely out of time, but do you have to also agree to the fact that I thought Vin Diesel actually gave a performance in 10? Like, there are moments where I think he had to actually give a performance. I think he did a good job.
Maybe the opening didn't work for me, which he has an emotional moment in that opening with like his son.
Yeah.
It's more of like, I'm not as connected to, you know, the character anymore. But maybe if I rewatch it, there's more to it there. But I wouldn't say that that's something I touched on.
All right. Audience picks. Harry Lichtman went with 7. Zen Jake went with Fast 5. Rachel sends a curveball with, I have literally only seen one Fast and Furious movie, Fast and Furious 6, and I've seen it at least a dozen times.
I did not know that's where that sentence was going.
That one?
Okay.
But a dozen times. So it's like, I guess you enjoy it.
Isaiah Washington also went with Furious 6. Carolina Missouri said The Fast and the Furious, first one, and lots of love for the first one across the board. We want to thank everybody for participating in this. We'll have more Fast talk next week when I'm sure we discuss the box office, and Kevin will be able to give his review of it, having seen it for next week. Going along with the fact that The Little Mermaid is returning to theaters, we're going to be playing hashtag Disney Live Action Blend. So get your favorite picks for Disney Live Action.
Well, hang on. I know that's technically that's how we would usually play this, but given that there's so few of those, and in general, middling to not great, I think for this one, for Disney Live Action Blend, I want to ask what classic or what Disney animated project do you want to see in live action next?
Interesting.
So like one that you love, one that you think that would work, you can pitch it however you want. Okay. But I think you're like, okay, they're giving the live action treatment. What is a classic Disney movie? And classic can mean the classic classics. It can mean Frozen. Doesn't necessarily mean old, but that you want to see in live action.
Okay. There you go.
It's more fun. Good. You think that's more fun? I feel like that'd be more fun.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. I think we could do that. We got to run. Kevin and I both have screenings. Our next premium episode.
You have to walk there.
Boogeyman.
Literally run there. Our next premium episode drops on Monday. Check descriptions below for where you can sign up for that information. We are on social media at Jake's Takes, at Kevin McCarthy TV, at Sean_O'Connell, at Gabe Kovach, and the show is at Real Blend. Hope you guys enjoyed the show this week. We'll be back with a new one next week. And until then,
Oppenheimer.
Arby.
Hockey pads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.